from the front office to center ice. This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hour number two here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Billy Jaffe with you. We'll get to your calls coming up here at 617-779-0985. But first, we check in with Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Joining us from down in Florida as well on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Ty.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good. When you went to morning skate yesterday and saw what the line combinations looked like, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was, let's get weird, baby. No, I saw it, and I think a lot of people were thinking, oh, this is a panic move. I actually didn't mind some of the ideas, like the idea of pairing Charlie Coyle with Brad Marchand. I really liked, because I felt that he's probably the closest thing you have to Patrice Bergeron, a strong center who can play well in all three zones and can win faceoffs. So I liked the idea of seeing that group together. Now, Trent Frederick was the wild card of that group, but I liked getting Lauko in there. I think speed is what this series called for. And, you know, I looked at that third line really with Krejci projected to be between DeBrusk and Hall and said, well, he has familiarity with both those players, not particularly recent familiarity, but he knows how they play and what to expect. So I didn't have a huge problem with it, given what they were trying to make do. What I loved, though, guys, is the back end. I loved splitting up Orlov and McAvoy. As good as they are together, I think putting, you know, having Lindholm, McAvoy, and Orlov on three different pairings is the best way to handle a road playoff game for this team.
Yeah, those guys, when they've been, I mean, it's not like when they've been together that they haven't been good regular season, but when they've been split up, the Bruins control ice. You pretty much have one of them, or can have one of them on the ice pretty much the entire game between Lindholm, McAvoy, and Orlov. And Orlov really was noticeable. We already talked about it with Bob Beers, but it's worth mentioning again how noticeable those big three were. And they had to be. They weren't at the level that they needed to be, not singling them out, but they are so valuable to this team, fellas, that they weren't they needed to be the first three games. And they were, our first two games, I mean, and they were in game three, difference makers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's sort of the, you know, you acquire Dmitry Orlov to put yourself over the top, right? And I think that when you look at the assignment that Lindholm and Carlo have gotten for the majority of this series, basically being asked to take on Alexander Barkov and his line, you know, to split up McAvoy and Orlov allows them both to shine. And I thought they shined in different ways last night. You know, McAvoy with the physicality right off the jump, and then in the third period with that big hit on Lundell, kind of starts a big, you know, brouhaha right in front of the Florida bench there. And then Orlov with those two tremendous passes there, the first one hitting Hall, the second one hitting Pasternak for those goals. Gigantic goals, looking back on it. You know, one's a few minutes into the game, gets you up 1-0 on the road. The other one puts the game away, essentially, at 3-0. So I thought that splitting them up really allowed them to shine in ways that really only they can. So I loved it. I really did love that move.
As far as the forward groupings last night, did you feel like in the first couple of games there were matchups even on the road that Florida was kind of targeting or exploiting? Was that part of the reason for as many changes as Montgomery was thinking about going into last night?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I thought that the thing that was most noticeable for me, at least with some of these changes, was, you know, having a kind of, I would say, a dogged pursuit on all four lines. And they've had that, but it felt especially noticeable, like, because I think you can get in on these guys. Like, I think Mark Stahl, Radko Gudas, I think you can, if you use your speed and your advantage there, I think you can get in on them. And I think that was, it felt like more of a design by that. Like, you know, Jim Montgomery talking after the morning skate yesterday kind of mentioned the idea of getting in with speed and maybe drawing some penalties as a result. So I think that was the most noticeable thing I took from it. And then, you know, with Krejci being out, it kind of became even more noticeable when the game started. It really felt like they were just playing to win battles. They built lines, I think, to win races and to maintain possession personally. That's just how I looked at it, but you know, I could be inventing narratives in my head for all I know.
Matt Grizzly gets into the lineup on the back end. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about this in the post game last night too. Montgomery and his staff deserve some credit. You know what I mean? Like, there's a we always saw him move lines around in regular season, guys in and out of the lineup, and almost always it worked. And almost always right. He has a wonderful feel for both in-game and then pre-game, you know, what this team needs. And you know, I thought it was another thing, you know, they used he didn't play huge minutes, but he comes in, he gets involved. He absolutely had to been significantly bummed he wasn't playing the first two games. Any player would, especially a guy like that, local kid, who's really been damn good this year, fellas.
Yeah.
He's been really good. So with all that said, what did you think of Grizzlies game, Ty? You know, my narrative. Yeah, sorry for the long-winded way of getting into it.
No, I agree. It was really interesting when the first period ended. I think he was under 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I think he was 3.5 or so, I want to say. And I was saying, oh, man, maybe he's got, you know, because if you remember that practice leading up to the game one, Montgomery mentioned he was a little sore. And I was like, oh, maybe he's not 100%, but they're going to, you know, throw him out there and hope that he can give him 12 strong minutes, right? Like, just based on the ice time. But you saw it tick up a little bit. He finished with 12.5, so it didn't uptick too much, but, you know, about a full minute more per period. You know, the chemistry there with McAvoy is always there, right? And I think what happens is it just allows the Bruins to have a more balanced lineup. And I say that with no disrespect to Connor Clifton, who we've seen move up and down the lineup at times, but Grizzlick has significant experience playing with pretty much everybody. You know, like every right side option you have, be it Carlo, McAvoy, you know, Clifton, you know, Orlov, like whoever you want to put out there, he's played with almost all of them, right? So with the exception of Forbert, that one's a little bit, you know, it's, I think, I want to say 20 minutes probably, just because they're both lefties. But I think that it just allows you versatility, right? Like, I don't think you could move Connor Clifton up to your top pairing, right? Like, I think there's a little bit too much movement there in terms of stick-handedness and know-how, or, you know, time together, whatever you want to call it. But Grizzly coming in, giving it 12 minutes, you know, with McAvoy, they had an on-ice edge of goals, 1-0. Like, that counts. In a game, you win by 2 goals. That matters, you know. So I always like their chemistry together, whether or not it sticks for a full 60, you know. But I think that's, again, that's the benefit of the roster you've built, is that, you know, if it's a third period and you're trying to protect the lead, you can flip Orlov back up there. You could flip Lindholm up there if you want. And I think having Grizzly in there really allows you to maximize your lineup sort of versatility.
Well, we also saw, you know, quite a bit, it felt like, in the first couple of games where, you know, the Bruins were turning pucks over, you know, the passes coming out of the zone were not necessarily great, or poor decisions being made. And, you know, that's one of the strengths that Grizzly will bring to the lineup too, is that he's, you know, excellent with that first pass out of the zone.
Yeah, and listen, the turnovers were still a slight issue last night. It wasn't as glaring as game two, which I think was probably their worst game possible on that front, it felt like. But I think the other part of it too, and Jim Montgomery alluded to this with Grizzly, is that they believe he's just so good at shutting down plays before they develop. You know, before Florida's in the zone and pressuring you, like, they think he's really good at shutting that down and getting it going the other way. You know, those kind of quick decisions and quick moves. And I agree. I think that when he's on his game, that's his bread and butter, right? And he's had a great season. And, you know, I felt that he gave you 12.5 minutes of noticeable, you know, positive hockey. And I think that that's what you hope for, right? And I know we've talked about this at various points in the season as well, but the way the Bruins play now, I don't think he has to absorb as much punishment as he did in years past under Kevin Dean and Bruce Cassidy. It feels like he's in a better spot when it comes to perhaps, you know, maintaining the level of physicality that comes with playoff hockey, I think.
We've gone an hour and 13 minutes in this show, and if we have mentioned his name, it's just because I don't have a good memory. If we have, it's minimal. We haven't talked about Brad Marchand.
No, have not.
Like, shame on us in that regard, because he's been really their best, most consistent player, I think.
Terrific in game two.
Right. I mean, he was great. Bertuzzi was great, too, in game two. But Marchand and Bertuzzi have been the two most consistent players through three games. Last night, everybody was really, really, really good. But in general, Brad Marchand, I think, I'll ask you guys both, I mean, it's back to that old Brad. Remember, he lamented the 15-game goalless drought. It's not even about, you know, he scores the other day on the shorty, which was wonderful. But it's, to me, it's not even about the scoring. It's about the puck battles winning and the stops and starts and the edge work. And the, I mean, he absolutely beat Mark Stahl how many times? Like two times along the wall there, lost the puck too, and yet ends up setting things up eventually for the Coyle goal. So it's nice to see it, isn't it, fellas? Ty, we'll start with you. See him back to that level. And he is completely leading by example without his best bud Patrice out there.
Yeah, and that last point is bang on, because I think that, you know, they've been trying to get under his skin a little bit, and what I've loved is that he just keeps playing. He's taken on that Charlie Coyle approach where he doesn't say anything, really. He just keeps on playing. And then, you know, I thought it was telling in game two that Radko Gudas is basically, you know, riding him. It's like a cornerback on a wide receiver the first 5 yards, the way he was playing him. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't freak out. Doesn't slam a bench door. The next shift out there, he draws a penalty on, you know, Ryan Lomberg comes over and cross-checks him, and the Bruins go to the power play. And I think there's been a lot of that. I think that, you know, the wall work has been some of his best of the season. I would say it feels like the hips are back, you know, after a whole year of basically Brad saying, I'm not there, I'm not there, I'm not there. It feels like his movement, especially in those tight sort of edge work issues, you know, situations we're talking about, it feels like it's there, right? And when he's going like this, he is another possession monster for this team. And it's funny because, you know, he's 5'9". You don't think of possession monster, you know, versus the 6'3 Charlie Coyle, but he's just so hard to knock off the puck. And, you know, when he gets that inside positioning on a defenseman, it is just it's honestly hilarious watching him put them through the washer. You know, like he just gets them going. So I think he's been fantastic. And again, just the mentality and what you're seeing on the ice, this is the Brad Marchand you've been waiting to see since last year's playoffs, I think.
And one of the better reverse hitters in the league. He had another one last night where he's taken some.
He's like, he's salivating.
He's taken some licks in this series already. I mean, they've been physical with him, but they were bearing down on him last night, and he can stand his ground despite the size differential with just about anybody.
Yeah, it is true. Like, he is, you know, and I think what's really interesting, guys, is that, you know, they went out and they added some guys who you would say are built for playoff hockey, right? Your Orlovs, your Bertuzzis, your Hathaways. And what I found really interesting is that it's taken pressure off Brad Marchand to be the heartbeat of this team, but he's still up there with Charlie McAvoy and Patrice Bergeron as, you know, the heartbeat of this team and where they're going. You know, when Brad Marchand is going, the Bruins are going. And I think you're seeing that right now. You know, he tried willing them back into game two when they were at their worst. And I think last night he really gave them an extra spark whenever he was on the ice. It was dominant. I thought whenever he was on the ice, the Bruins were in control the entire way.
Well, the real question before we let you go is, what's road tie going to be like after practice? And you got time to walk around in Florida. I mean, we've been asking everybody
so
else.
Much so much to do in the area.
So much. Well, if you haven't been down to Sunrise, I'm assuming you're in that area. Otherwise,
yes,
it's a schlep. That's a kind word to get from. Everybody thinks, oh, you're at the beach. No, you're literally 40 minutes from the beach with you know, some traffic. And, you know, teams that have stayed at the beach need, you know, police escorts to get from the beach just to the game in time sometimes. So are you going to walk the mall? You know, I'm sure you're going to see some other people over there doing the same thing.
Yeah, so actually had some time between morning skate and the game last night. I did walk the mall. It's an absolutely insane mall.
Yes.
I've never seen anything like it. This is just, I got lost in there twice, I'm pretty sure. And it's got, you know, all my apparel kind of stores. So I was really excited about that. I actually think tonight after practice, I think a few of us, you know, in the Bruins media, I think we're going to hit up Topgolf, and that's fun for me. I've never been golfing. I've been in the driving range. I've never been golfing besides mini golf. So this should be a lot of fun. I'm going to just try to hit it as far as I can. That's my approach to it.
All right, Ty, appreciate the time. Enjoy yourself down there. We'll talk to you next week.
Awesome. Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
There's Ty Anderson joining us from 98.5thesportshub.com from down in Florida. All right, rest of the show belongs to you. 617-779-0985. We get more of your calls as we've got Billy Jaffe in studio with us for the rest of the hour here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
Stay tuned for more of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers. This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub. It is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Billy Jaffe with you.
Appropriate for our conversation that we were just having off air. Food.
Just talking food, meats, barbecuing.
Yes.
Yeah, Billy's asking me, like, what are you going to make tomorrow? Like, I don't know. It's supposed to be pouring rain all day. It's like
it is.
One of those days that I could battle through it, but, you know, maybe I...
Order in.
like maybe a Patrice Bergeron. Maybe we just wait until game five.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to feel not like playoff hockey weather here. It's going to be that it's only supposed to be in, at best in the mid-50s, it
right.
like, and a lot of rain. I knew that it wasn't going to be that warm, but you know, this time of year is so great because everybody's got a little jump in their step for playoff hockey because it's different clothes, you know, needed, different outlooks in theory, but tomorrow looks to be a kind of a drab day.
Well, let's get to your calls here on Game 3/4 coming up tomorrow afternoon. 617-779-0985. John is up next. Hey, John.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning. It was a sweet win last night. It took a lot of pressure off the Bruins, and so let's keep going, you know. I just had a quick comment, and I wanted to get your reaction to it. I haven't heard all that much discussion about this, but it seems like the Panthers have two different, distinctly different styles of play. When, you know, they have this sort of fast, aggressive game that, where they're a good scoring team, and they also, when they get behind, though, they're kind of dirty, I think. And like Gudas, for example, I see him hauling down players all the time.
Gudas is an interesting player to watch.
He's been doing that his whole career. I don't know, John. Thanks for the call. If you've been watching some other games around the league too, when all of a sudden the game starts getting away from one other team in that playoff game, that stuff comes out. That's hockey.
I mean, it happened with the Bruins in game two. I mean,
right.
They lost their composure a little bit when they got behind in game two.
If there was any hockey talk happening in Florida, doubting, but if there was, I should say, in Sunrise area, there may be a caller calling up to that show and saying after game two, oh, the Bruins and they're dirty. That's just the way it is. He's absolutely spot on with regard to the fact that they want to play fast. Look, they're a top-heavy team that loves to score off the rush if they can. I do give them credit in the first two games. They played that neutral zone in game one. Their strong side D stepped up beautifully. The Bruins were not ready for it. They didn't handle it well. They kind of controlled that neutral zone for two periods, RJ, until the third period when the Bruins played really well. Doesn't game one feel like a month ago?
Yeah.
It does. It just does. But so I give credit to Florida for that. And in game two, you know what? They didn't get buckled at all. It was 2-2. They came out. They end up winning the opening faceoff. Montour scores that long goal. We know the Bruins didn't play well, but I keep going back to this. You got to understand there's another team on the ice that is wanting to win as badly as your team does usually as well.
And look, the Florida Panthers, despite being the second wild card, they finished the year strong to get into the playoffs. I mean, stronger than they had been for much of the season.
Yep.
But there's a there's a decent amount of talent on this team.
They won the President's Trophy a year ago, too.
Right.
With a lot of these guys. Not 100%, but a lot of these guys. So I'm with you. But with regard to being dirty, I mean, look, this is what, if you want to talk about Radko Gudas, this is exactly what he does. He wants to do these things. This is his game. He wants to step up. He wants to try and take you out. If he misses you, he might take you out in a bad spot. He might catch your hip, your knee, your, you know, I mean, and if you allow him to play what we call straight up hockey, you're going to have a harder time with him. If you move and you cause him to have to use lateral movement and quickness, you're going to have an easier time with him. He's going to break down in his own zone.
Well, I mean, knock on wood, he has been physical, hasn't been, I wouldn't say he's been dirty in this series.
No,
it doesn't mean he won't be at some point.
Yeah,
because there's
and
history there. But
he's just out of control too. I don't know his intent. I can't get in his head. But he puts himself into some questionable spots because of just how he steps up and plays. Whether it's intent or not, I don't know. But he hasn't had to do that yet. You're right. And so let's knock on Formica here and hope that it doesn't happen to anybody.
Let's go to Mike in Florida. Was at the Bruins game last night. What's up, Mike?
Certainly was. Section 319, row 1, was worth the extra money because tickets are really cheap here. $80 to $130, $400-plus in comparison to what those seats are in Boston.
Even with the flight, that might be cheaper than going to the Garden this week. So
I've been living here a long time, though, so I don't have to worry about that. I'll tell you, Judd's going to take the 30-minute drive East Sunrise to Fort Lauderdale and have a good time. And take the water taxi, one round trip ticket for $30 all day, get on and off, have some beers, go to some nice restaurants, and have a great time.
He's done that in his career. trust me, I've been there with him
times. I don't know. The bars are great here, and the beach is fantastic. I call that the swamp. Sunrise is a swamp. But I will tell you this. You want to get a good idea of the impact on Bruins fans? First of all, watch the men's bathroom. The line was a mile long, and it looked like you were at the Garden. It was one Bruins jersey after another going to the bathroom. As soon as Hall scored that goal in the first period, the air came out of the building. Every Panther fan that was actually there, it was dead. It became total Boston. Okay, that's what I can tell you. And technically, hockey-wise, I want to see Charlie McAvoy start shooting the puck. He's holding and constantly focusing tunnel vision, pass, pass, pass. Charlie's got to shoot the freaking puck. Have a great day.
All right, appreciate the call. And McAvoy is one of those guys that can get into those patterns. It's something that's come up on this show a number of times over the years that he has a great ability to get his shots through traffic to the net, but sometimes he just doesn't use it enough. Sometimes he just doesn't shoot enough. He doesn't have any shots in the last two games.
Mm-hmm. On net. Yeah, he has attempts, but not on net.
So, you know, I love the physicality that he has shown in this series. We talked about the hit right off the bat last night. He had 8 hits again last night.
Yeah. Two games with 8 hits in the series.
Yeah.
So he has 2 shots on goal. In the series so far, it's hard to disagree. I get and the shoot first mentality probably is a challenge given that you know you got one of the top goal scorers in the world to your left an awful lot in David Pastrnak, and then you know that the Bruins seem to have had effectiveness with regard to when their power play is moving. They move the puck quickly. You know who gets a lot of more shots on net is Lindholm when he's doing well. They seem to get rebounds off that. Orlov gets to the elbow oftentimes. But McAvoy seems to move the puck more so. And I'm not going to disagree. I'd love to see him shoot more. Just like Charlie Coyle. When he puts that mindset of shoot first. Like we talked, 5 shots on goal last night. That's phenomenal.
And good things happen.
Great things happen. But, yeah, don't be careless with it. I'm not a total believer, RJ. The old saying, you'll hear people say, never a bad shot on net. I actually disagree with that. There sometimes are bad shot attempts.
When Alex Lyon's in net.
There are more
shots are good shots.
Right. I was going to say that's different. In this case, pump it towards the net.
617-779-0985. More of your calls on the way as we head into the final half hour of this week's Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The app. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerot, Bob Beers. The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gave it away at the high slot. Kachuk sent it out in front. Lostarina the backhand. And Omark the save. The rebound. Omark denies again. High slot now. Ekblad with a drive. Deflected. And Kachuk's drive taken in by Omark. And then it's skipped by McAvoy. Now over the line, left side, Duclair, left circle, shoots, and Omark the save as he squared up to the shot. And it's chipped out to center ice. Now you might have a two-on-one for Higgy over the line, right side into the right circle. Backhand, and Omark with a glove over at the far post. He snatched it out of the air. Now in the slot, Montour a drive, and Omark the save. He pushed off and took it right in the chest.
.985 The Sports Hub. You hear the sound of our UFOs saves of the week, the amazing saves of the week presented by UFOs. They've teamed with Jeremy Swayman for Kick Saves for Cancer. UFOs donated $10 for every save this season to the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, up to $25,000. Learn about their goal of finding a cure at UFOs.com. That's OOFOS.com. By the way, be listening throughout the course of the playoffs this postseason as we here at 98.5 The Sports Hub, as your Bruins flagship station, will be giving away tickets for every Bruins home playoff game throughout the postseason. Just be listening to win. Select tickets still available at bostonbruins.com/tickets to reserve your seats today. Ryan Johnston, joined by Billy Jaffe this week here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. By the way, thank you for my brand new Morning Brew tumbler traveler, here.
Yeah.
It is a
you're welcome.
This thing's got some heft to it too.
Yeah, those are good.
This is very nice. Looking forward to having that stolen by my wife.
I appreciate all the support, and the travelers have been a success. They've been a lot of good stuff for us.
By the way, we also I heard you say it last night on TV, so let me send birthday wishes to Jake Jaffe
today,
turning 13 today.
We got two, somehow, some way it happened. We got two teenagers in our house now. The demise is unbelievable. No, yeah, happy birthday to Jake. And he's off skating right now, getting a little work in, some power skating stuff. And then he's going to have a little fun day.
Nice.
Thanks, buddy.
Nice. And just also real quick, while we're at things,
yeah,
there's an alumni game going
there
on.
There is.
Today.
2 o'clock at Warrior today. Bruins alumni, I believe, season finale. So if you want to go out and watch a little hockey, perhaps just a minute, a little slower than the actual hockey that you're used to watching. And there's a goalie line that's formed for today in order of, I guess, experience. Reggie Lemelin, senior member of the line. Then Andrew Raycroft. And then one Tuukka Rask. I don't know if it's going to be puck movement extraordinaire, and it might be. Who knows? I want to know. I think Reggie will be the finisher on that line. So 2 o'clock at Warrior, always a great time and a great cause to go check out the Bruins alum. And if you're in the neighborhood, go check them out at Warrior.
I know some people that saw the photos of Tuukka playing forward and got a little freaked out. Just didn't. It's like looks weird. He's wearing a regular hockey helmet. And he's carrying a regular stick. This is not what we're used to.
I'm going to be curious if one of them back checks all day. Going to be curious.
All right, let's get back to your calls here. 617-779-0985. Tom in Boston is up next. Hey, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I'm calling because I know everybody's getting real frustrated with, I think Ty Anderson called it lying season. Like, the coaches never tell the truth about injuries. And I was just wondering, RJ, you specifically, because it seems like you have a hand in this kind of stuff. Is the NHL going to crack down on all this now that the betting is such an important part of their revenue?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't really thought about that part of it. Because it has been just such an accepted part of the sport over the years, is when you get anywhere close to the postseason, you know, it used to be, because now it's become more common during the regular season where you get, you don't really find out specifics of injuries. It's just generally upper body, lower body. But that used to be the playoff thing. You would know, it's like, okay, this guy's got a knee problem. This guy's got a hip problem. This guy's got a shoulder problem. Now, and then once you got to the playoffs, it would just be, oh, he's got an upper body or a lower body. It would kind of become vague. Now you're lucky if they even give you that at this point. It's just, he's a little banged up. He's day to day. They don't even give you any sort of specifics because, you know, they don't want guys getting targeted. If you know a guy's got a shoulder problem, You're gonna test him out when he gets back on the ice.
Yeah, it's a good question. Was it Tom? Part of me is like, well, if the NHL really wanted to be serious about it, they would have said right away with all this new money coming in, betting wise, right? And I mean money, advertising, sponsorship money, that they would have made a mandate. You know, the beginning, right? And then it may trickle back to what it was. I wonder. I don't know. I haven't heard about anything about that. No. And down the road, if they see an impact, perhaps in the amount of gambling or lack there, isn't it more in hockey? And this is my complete ignorance. I'm not a gambler, so I'm, you know, isn't it more about prop bets than anything with the NHL? Or is it still, or no, is it still even about,
well, I mean,
just who wins and loses?
Yeah, there's all of it. I mean, there's a million different ways to bet on everything.
Of course,
right?
Yeah,
so,
no. But I thought the NHL was even more prop stuff. But
yeah, maybe... I mean, it is. You can bet on how many shots a guy's going to get, how many assists, goals. I mean, there's, you know, how many saves, shots, all that stuff. I guess, you know, what he's asking is basically the NFL has an official injury report daily. And the teams are held to a certain standard. They have to theoretically tell the truth about, you know, how the guy's availability. Is he probable? Is he questionable? All that stuff. Does it get to that point in the NHL?
If the money gets that significant, that whatever that means, whatever it does, maybe it'll get better. But until my take.
That would be, I mean, can you imagine walking into some of these coaches and saying, "Coach, you have to tell us, right? We have to have a full accounting of all of your injuries." And
love to be on that call with Lou Amarillo if he's still GMing.
That's going
to
be one of those. It's like, okay, how about we give you a list of 20 guys? Every guy's going to have questionable with something next to it, and you can figure it out.
Yeah.
Because that's basically how it is anyway. I mean, there isn't a guy in the league who doesn't have, you know, some sort of bump or bruise after the end of 82 games plus playoffs.
Yeah.
Let's go to Johnny up next. Johnny, you're up next on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Good morning.
Gentlemen, great show. Thanks for giving us a forum to talk a little hockey on a Saturday morning.
Sure.
I want to be consistent here, and I was glad Omar looked good, looked strong on his post last night. But I was of the mindset that you're probably going to have to go into this series and go into this postseason with the platoon. I just think Swayman's been so good, and you know how goalies get in their own heads that once they get comfortable and in a routine. But if we didn't see Swayman last night, my question to you is if we're ever going to see Swayman. And then the last thing I have written down right here, and Billy, you watch a lot more out-of-market hockey than I do, and I don't watch a ton of it until the postseason. Does it feel like the West Coast teams, or not just the West Coast teams, but teams in the Western Conference, they just play a faster style of hockey? That's just my question for you. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Well, if you see a lot of West and you see a lot of two teams, Edmonton and Colorado.
Right.
And by the way, Seattle's really fast as a team too, but you don't see their highlights as much, right? You're going to think that they're faster because they've got unbelievable star quality to them. I don't know. I think the East at times has been faster, believe it or not. I do. You know, the Bruins aren't what you would call a speed demons, but they play a fast style, but they're really more about puck possession, right? Mm-hmm. That when they're all said and done. But there's some other, I mean, the Rangers can play a fast game. They can play a really fast game. The Devils, arguably the fastest team in the East, if not in the league. But it's a valid point because I think it's, you know, Dallas, I think, is a real fast team. Overall, are they faster? I'm not sure about that. I mean, many in Dallas are playing a brutally tough series. If you get a chance, by the way, watch that series. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's got some violent mood swings and violentness. Violence, I guess, is the word.
To the other part of his question about, you know, the possibility of Swayman playing last night, I thought it was worth at least consideration of Swayman going in game three. Not that I thought Olmark was outwardly bad, but
did.
You will see at some point,
yeah.
I mean, during this playoff run, you will see both.
I wouldn't, absolutely. And it's not going to shock anybody. And the most important thing, it's not going to shock anybody in that locker room if or when they see Swayman's name up. Not. It's not going to. But, you know, Bob Assenta, we give a lot of credit to Jim Montgomery, and we always say, and his staff, and Bob's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Bob handles almost all of these decisions for the goaltending. He has got an absolute pulse on it. Trust him. We've seen the development of both these goaltenders under him and other goalies as well. But his decision-making this year has been spot on, too. The Olmark thing, I absolutely think that they were saying, hey, if he's really, you know, game-time decision, or if that was just kind of smoke and mirrors, who knows, maybe just trying to mess with the heads of the opponent a bit, or just, you know, whatever, not willing to give anything up. I still think Swayman is ready. You know, Swayman is a sponge. He's soaking things in. I agree with the caller. He's played beautiful, especially the last 2 months of the season. His body language and his body of work has been tremendous. I absolutely think we will see him at some point.
John and Lynn's got a thought on the ending of the Edmonton-LA game last night, which we were talking about off the air, actually, this morning.
Well, right, before you get real quick, then,
yes.
If you haven't seen it, in overtime, there was a puck that got lofted into the air behind the goal line. A player by the name of Gabe Vilardi reacted, and his stick was up in the air. The question is whether it hit his stick or not, because he was then the next player to touch it.
Right. So, would have been a high stick violation.
Right.
They didn't whistle it down. The play continued. Kings score the game-winning goal
seconds,
in overtime.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Yes.
But here's the other thing, before we get to the caller, because it's a good call, you're allowed, after it was beginning of last year, 2 years ago, actually, I think. Jeez, my memory sucks. Where they implemented these ability to review these type of plays, a hand pass, a high stick, puck off netting, et cetera.
Right.
Because what they termed it as, is it a good hockey goal? All right.
All right, let's get to John. You're up next here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Morning.
Love the show. Aside from the high stick, though, I mean, that was iffy. Couldn't tell really if he touched it. But my problem is with the penalty that led up to this. Ridiculous slash with a stick. If the stick didn't break, nothing happens there. What is it? We've got to wipe out that penalty for hitting a stick with a stick.
Hold on. I'm not arguing. I'm talking about, okay? There was a distinct slashing moment. Motion, though. You can't disagree with that, all right? At least I don't think you can there. But we have seen such an emphasis on slashing the last couple of years. Remember, it all started with Johnny Gaudreau when he was out 2 years ago in Calgary. The complaints, remember how he's getting whacked in the hands constantly and everything. And so the league then implemented this impact. I'm going to agree, I think, with the caller and other people.
When they played with wood sticks, this was known as a stick check, right?
When they played with wood sticks, they also allowed that kind of chopping.
That's
motion.
What I'm saying. Like meaning, you could do that. You could just put your stick
and
across
in the playoffs.
The
when they
stick,
played
and
with wood sticks, you had to get killed in or at least attempted murder to get a penalty, especially in overtime. In many ways, unfortunately, it's changed. Right? It's gotten much less. I mean, geez, we have hooking calls. It's just when the stick is across the knees of somebody, for crying out loud. And so I get it. It's a new age call. I agree with him. Here's the problem. If you're going to call that in the first period and the stick breaks, and again, I'm with him, but that's it's the feast of the and the famine of the new technology. The shots are harder. Players, everybody can shoot now. On the other hand, technology doesn't always win.
I get the reasoning behind why they have cracked down on it because, as you said, it becomes a player safety issue. If you guys, if you go for that play, you go to, slash the guy across the stick and you get him across the wrists instead, you got a star player potentially sitting out the rest of the playoffs.
Right.
And that's what they don't want. The part of it that drives me nuts is when the stick doesn't even break, the guy just drops it. And then you draw a penalty for that.
Yeah.
There's got to be some
this generation of hockey players has grown up with these sticks, this technology, et cetera, too, so they understand that those type of things. And it's they've also, in theory, grown up with this style of play where they the points of emphasis. But it's still so, at times, maddening. And I try to support the officials in many ways just because it's a brutally tough job, but they chose to do it. But on the other hand, man, it's just – we go from these very marginal soft plays that end up getting called. Again, these we want the players to flow freely, you know, but, man, a lot of these aren't hooking or whatever. And then we get some of these crazy things that are called or aren't called, and it's just it can get upsetting.
All right, let's grab a call from Al in the car up next here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Good morning, Al.
Good morning. I have a two-part question, kind of curiosity. I know a lot of athletes are superstitious. How is that in hockey? That's the first part.
Very. Yes.
All right. My second part of the question is, what did everybody think of Pasta that cutting his hair just before the game where they lost?
It's a hell of a mullet he's got going on there.
He does. He's very proud of it, too. More than anything, it's not about cutting the hair, at least in my eyes. It's about not wearing any hats.
Yes, because he typically likes to wear the hat with the suit when he walks into the arena.
He is so proud of, we'll call it it's like a spiked mullet. It's right? A little spikage to it, a little tight. I love the kid, and I love his personality. I'm so happy that he scored. I think the proverbial floodgates can open because that goal that he scored in game one, not that it wasn't important, it obviously was, but it was a beautiful pass from Bertuzzi, no look, and then the net's open, he just slides it in. But that goal last night was a Pasta goal, right? And I'm hoping that leads now to things opening up. And I'm hoping, given his – he was much better on back check. He was much better physically checking last night. And I'm hoping that those things – he worked with the hockey god, so to speak, with his effort and style. And he finally got rewarded at the end. And let's not forget, game two, he had a great opportunity, completely missed the net. Remember that one-timer? So I'm hoping that leads to a big afternoon. Pasta has been really good in the afternoon games the last 5 weeks of the season, too.
He had seven shots, as we mentioned last night. He only had four combined in the first two games, which clearly you need more than that. But that line – struggled for a good chunk of the first two games. The Krejci, and although I will say, Pasternak and Bertuzzi seem to have a connection.
They do.
I mean, Bertuzzi's a hell of a passer.
Yep.
And Pasternak's a hell of a receiver for those passes. So that part of it has worked out. But I was good to see. I thought Zacha back with Pasternak. I think those two have worked really well together this year too.
Absolutely. And that becomes the road lineup. You know, again, now we don't need to get into the whole thing that we thought Krejci was going to be on a different line there too, but that was one of the reasons that I thought that the lines were at least constructed initially or were going to be if Krejci's in the lineup for the road too. You had different looks. You know Hall and DeBrusque, if Krejci played with them, are two very speedy guys. That kind of pushes the pace. You know, Pasta or Krejci does slow it down, but he gets two guys that could speed. And whether the lines, if Krejci played, stayed together, who the hell knows? But I'm sorry, there was a road lineup in my eyes, too.
So game four coming up tomorrow afternoon and
3:30, 2 o'clock pregame, hour and a half.
Nice.
90 minutes.
90 minutes of Jaffe and Company tomorrow.
Hey.
You guys did that for game one, too. We did. I was excited. It's
yes.
Like, because you know what? The problem with these games sometimes is you're waiting all day, waiting for the thing to start. You know, it's a 3:30 faceoff. Doesn't seem like that late, but by noon or 1 o'clock tomorrow, I'll be like, is it time for the game yet? Is it time for the game? So at least when you guys start early, it gives me something to do.
Yeah, no, Nesson loves if they can do it, the extra time they do. I mean, you know, most markets do a half an hour at most.
Yeah.
At most. So no, 90 minutes. And then update on the game on Wednesday night, game five, thankfully.
Instead of 7 o'clock, they pushed it up to
7 o'clock. So if you're looking to go to the game or if you're going to be watching, folks, it's a 7 o'clock game on Wednesday night.
And since I am working Tutcher and Rich on Thursday morning, I am very excited about the 7 o'clock face-off.
You've been doing a great job there.
Appreciate that.
I hope you're having fun with that.
I am. I wouldn't be getting up at 4:30 in the morning if I wasn't having fun doing it.
That's a good point.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will talk to you next Saturday.
This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
1-7-7-7-9-0-9-8-5. The telephone number. Chris, that was a big win for the Bruins last night, no question.
Yeah, I mean, to not have Bergeron and then the sort of surprise of no David Krejci, you're without your top two centers, you're on the road, you jumbled all your lines. And what I thought, honestly, when I listened to Jim Montgomery pregame, I was listening to the line combinations that were coming out from the reporters, I was like, what are they doing? This is like panic. You just lost one game. I mean, he had 65 wins and 135 points. Why are you panicking? But you know what? Like most things this season for the Bruins, it turned out that they were right and we were wrong. Anybody who questioned those lines, because they went out there, built a 4-0 lead, really carried the play. You know, I think they kind of gave Florida some momentum there at the end. McCone with those two goals.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.